is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. The universities of the United States of America are credit to more than 200 years of striving for liberty and free speech, the Constitution, the First Amendment. The strength is in the universities and the colleges. However, I welcome Victor Davis Hanson of the Hoover Institution on campus at Stanford University, commenting on the universities, asking this provocative question: who owns our universities, both public and private? Who owns them? A very good evening to you, Victor. This trouble is sparked again by an incident at Stanford Law School, which we will address. But the larger story of the university life these last years of reporting is dire. It started some years ago. I remember a conversation about Swarthmore College in suburban Philadelphia, a beautiful place that was associated in the mid-60s with total liberty, with suggested the flower generation of the boomers. However, today there was an within these last years, there was an episode where a distinguished speaker, it doesn't matter the name, was to be blocked or rejected by the students of Swarthmore. I didn't think more of it at the time than that it was rude, but now it becomes almost routine to the point that it doesn't make headlines. So who owns these universities? Who's in charge of permitting this clear insult of the men and women who put together the First Amendment? Good evening to you.
Good evening, John. Well, I think the students who are transitory residents there for, in the case of the law school at Stanford, 3 years, and the administrators feel that they are synonymous with Stanford, I guess because it's a private university. But that's not true, because they have a $1.5 billion on average grant from us, the taxpayers, to conduct and support research and various programs at Stanford. And there is about a third of $1 billion at least in student loans to Stanford students that we, the taxpayer, guarantee. And then, of course, John, they have a $35 billion endowment, which gives them an annual revenue of about $2 billion that we don't collect tax on. So we lose $700 or $800 million a year, all on the theory that Stanford is a nonprofit, disinterested for the public good. But if it's going to not follow the Constitution and not protect people's First Amendment rights while on campus, then it really suggests that the taxpayers and the public, who I think in a sense own the university, just as they do other universities that choose to be subsidized by them, then they need to step up and demand that either the Constitution applies on campuses that we, the taxpayers, subsidize in so many ways to so many hundreds of millions of dollars in the case of Stanford. And if they don't want to do that, John, they can do what Hillsdale College does. Hillsdale College says, we feel that the federal government is too left-wing and puts too many demands on us, so we just don't, we follow the Constitution, but we don't want to have federal guidelines, so we don't want any money. And they take nothing from the federal government, not even student loans that are guaranteed by the federal government.
The presumption, and I follow your reporting, the presumption by the universities is that by not heeding the First Amendment, they will not be punished, or they will not see their subsidies from the federal government challenged, because they presume the federal government is sympathetic to their ignoring the First Amendment. Is that the assumption at the administration level?
I think so. I think that's true. I think we would know that if that speaker, if we had a judge who was, and there are many that are what would they call pro-choice or pro-abortion, and gave a talk, and some conservative evangelical students disrupted it and called the pro-abortion justice scum and wish for his or her daughters to be raped, and broke up the lecture and prevented the pro-abortion speaker at the law school from finishing, and a conservative dean then interrupted and turned to the pro-abortion speaker and said, you know, you pretty much asked for this by coming to this campus and being so radical in your views of supporting, you know, abortion on demand. What would have happened? I think the students who disrupted that speaker would have been expelled in 12 hours. And I think the faculty member who hijacked that lecture would have been expelled in 24 hours. I expect that the entire administration would have condemned that. And I think the Biden administration would have weighed in on it as a number of national politicians would. So it's not symmetrical, is what I'm trying to suggest. And that's true. What's happening in the country is that the left feels that its ends are so morally superior that it needs extra normal or extraordinary means to accomplish them that can be contextualized or exempt or forgiven.
Since we spoke of this issue the first time, it's become a national story. And so I'm keen on pursuing your thoughts, but I want to introduce something that's happened in these last days that seems and additionally alarming. This is from the office of the president of Wayne State University, Roy Wilson. This morning, I was made aware of a social media post by a Wayne State University professor in our Department of English. The post stated that rather than shouting down those whom we disagree, one would be justified to commit murder to silence them. I stopped there. There's more to the letter. This refers to specific people at Wayne State University. But I followed the response from the distinguished professor Robert George at Princeton University, who followed this story. And Robert George reminds all of us that the faculty are especially vulnerable to these censors, and especially vulnerable to the trend that we've been talking about. However, in this particular instance, the Wayne State University professor seems to have crossed to the side of despots, of brutes, of murderers. Now, Victor, is this a one-off? I do not spend my time on campus.
No, it reflects a larger trend in society. Academia is at the forefront, but they're not alone. The left, again, feels, we just had the other day in The View that the notorious octogenarian Jane Fonda, when asked, is protesting against restrictive abortion laws enough, she just deadpan, no, murder is necessary. And then later, when there was an outcry, she sort of backed off against it. We had this then, remember, we had the then Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer get right in front of the doors of the Supreme Court 3 years ago and say, Kavanaugh, Gorsuch, you sow the wind and you're going to reap the whirlwind. And then, quote, you will not know what's going to hit you. And then we were just disclosed this week that mobs that appeared at the homes of Supreme Court justice in violation of federal law that says that their home should be sacrosanct and people should not protest to affect their opinions. They were exempt. And we had an assassin turn up in the case of Brett Kavanaugh who tried to get to his home. So it's a general idea. And we saw that with the asymmetrical treatment of the January 6th and the 2020 protesters. Everybody decried the entry in the Capitol and those people were punished. But my God, in 2020, we had 35 people killed, 1,500 police officers injured, $2 billion in damage. We had a federal courthouse torched, a police precinct torched, historical church torched in Washington, D.C. People tried to get onto the White House lawn, and there was almost no consequences. Very few of the people who were arrested were ever indicted. And of those who indicted, very few were convicted and served time. And again, it's this asymmetry that there's a sense that under these critical theories, critical legal theory, critical penal theory, critical race theory, that you can contextualize an act of violence or an act of unlawful conduct. And that ruins deterrence. So the students and the dean, Jenny Martinez, wrote a very eloquent, John, defense of free speech. But if she's not going to punish the students for violation, they're going to do it again.
Victor,
there's no consequences.
Victor, I want to turn to the faculty when we come back, because there is what is to be done, it's at the faculty level. Without the faculty, the university is a vast, empty place of large buildings. You need the faculty to cooperate or to dissent or to lead. Victor Davis Hanson is a member of the faculty at Hillsdale College. He's also a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution on campus at Stanford University. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.